With the legislative session retreating in our rearview mirror, we're checking in with freshman state lawmakers to hear about their experience at the Capitol. On today's show, we're joined by Assemblyman Damon Meeks, a Rochester area Democrat. Welcome to the show, Assembly Member.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So leading up to this year's legislative session, you gained some local and state attention when you were arrested at an eviction proceeding in Rochester. About a week after that incident, the legislature approved new eviction and foreclosure protection measures. Do you have any sense of whether your experience helped prompt that legislative action?
I do believe it may have helped prompt it. Not something that I expected to go through on that evening. I felt it was a grave injustice to sit there and evict a mother and three children on an 18-degree Rochester winter night. And if you know anything about this region of the state, when you have 18 degrees on the thermostat, that means it's actually about, factor in the wind chill, probably closer to like 10 degrees as far as the actual feel. So, going there that evening, I expected to show the community what was going on by way of my social media platform, and I decided to go live. And the next thing you know, I was spent about 3 to 4 hours in the back of a police car handcuffed. So I think it did really bring to light the challenges that so many families were facing across the state with potential eviction during the height of a pandemic. And even with some of the housing shelters struggling with not knowing what the next step would potentially be. So some were thinking, okay, well, we can continue to house individuals, and others were thinking, well, maybe we need to not house people here. Can we see if we can find resources from the state or local government to house people in different facilities or hotels, so that, we don't have people on top of one another as far as housing in the community shelters.
In the wake of that incident, you used your pulpit to highlight the holes in the housing safety net that was tried to put in place during the pandemic. With the official disaster declaration now behind us in New York, how would you grade the state's response to the housing challenges presented by the arrival of COVID-19 and the shutdown of the economy for many months, whether it's homeless issues or eviction issues or foreclosure issues or anything else that comes to mind?
I think the pandemic really opened our eyes to a number of challenges that exist historically in New York State, whether we're talking about the healthcare crisis, a housing crisis, the list could go on. The food deserts that may exist in different communities, I think it brought a different light to the challenges that we face as a state. And I think, we responded as government in a manner to basically take into consideration what was the immediate challenge. So when we look at evictions, we knew that there was a need for an eviction moratorium. So we moved forward with the eviction moratorium. And we didn't move forward in a manner to say, hey, as government, we're going to put ownership and full responsibility on landlords, even though some landlords felt that was the case because, this has been a struggle for them. But we immediately went to the table to figure resources for, landlords. As well as tenants, to assure that, we were doing our due diligence to make all parties whole. So, there were some challenges, and some of these challenges still exist. And, this is something that caught so many of us off guard. And we just looked at how do we move forward and what we recognize is the best option at that given time. So now looking back in the hindsight, there may have been some different things that we could have done differently. And, hopefully in the future, we're not faced with this type of thing again. But in the case that we are, I think that we have learned from this experience thus far and we'll continue to learn from the challenges of COVID.
Well, you mentioned that effort to provide relief, not only to landlords, but to the tenants specifically, so that they can stay in their homes. And one of the key ways the state has tried to do that over the last 16 months is providing rental assistance. And there was this program that went out last year, authorizing about $100 million. I don't believe all of that money has been spent. And right now, the state's in the process of trying to distribute more than $2 billion in funding, I think a tiny fraction of which is starting to go out the door. Has that been frustrating to watch that timeline by which state government acts? Because you're one of, 150 assembly members, so do you feel powerless at all when you're trying to watch that? Do you ever get frustrated having this role in state government, but being like powerless when it comes to trying to make it happen faster?
Yeah, and I wouldn't really describe it as feeling powerless.
Okay.
I think one of the things that has been quite beneficial to me in my role, and I'll say this time and time again, is the advocates. The different organizations that are out there, the different tenant unions, the different housing advocates who are saying, hey, we need to do this and we need to do that. And, working collectively with them, as well as our state officials who are on the same accord, that understand the importance of housing, and, willing to take a stance and say enough is enough as it relates to these housing insecurities. I think that working together collectively, we know that we have the power and the ability to move an agenda forward and to get things done. And we're able to do that.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and our guest is Rochester Assemblyman Damon Meeks. At the time of your arrest at the eviction in December, you noted that the city mobilized seemingly a lot of resources to conduct an eviction, but you felt like the same emphasis was missing when it came towards the city's responsibilities to root out code violations by landlords. What is the best way to promote robust code enforcement? Is it just a question of priorities, or is there a lack of resources?
I would say a combination of the two, right? Because, we see that there were resources available that night, right? You had, 30-plus police officers who were, armed and dressed in riot gear, with shields in front of them. And you also had other police officers who were present, who weren't part of that group. So we know that the money and resources are there. But I guess it's a question of which particular aspect of the city budget does that money go into? Do we, want to put that type of money into having police officers come with that level of force towards a tenant who had taken a stance and said, hey, listen, enough is enough. I'm dealing with a slumlord. I've dealt with, rodents, coming into my household, unwelcome guests of sorts. And, I've paid my rent, but enough is enough. There's code violations on this home, and I'm taking a stance. And I'm saying that I'm not going to continue to pay you to house me in these type of conditions. I think that, we could put money towards individuals who will go out there and hold these landlords accountable. But then I looking at that situation, I know small, mom and pop landlords, for a lack of a better term, who owns a house or a property or side by side, and they've had their challenges with tenants. But it was interesting to see that, this particular landlord on that evening is one who has been known to own multiple properties, as well as, storefront properties, industrial complexes, and his real estate is pretty diverse as far as the type of properties that he owned. And, this is one who has, who makes a decent penny of sorts as it relates to his tenants and his real estate properties. So we don't see the same energy put forth when you have the mom and pop landlord that may be struggling versus, you know, this guy who is well-to-do financially and may also have some political clout. And you know, we've seen things move in his favor and to the detriment of this family.
So then, based on that mindset, I guess, is this something where the state needs to step in and provide regulations and rules that cities need to follow? Or do we need to trust cities and their leaders and give them flexibility to take a nuanced approach?
I think, you know, cities could possibly move in the right direction. However, I think it also goes back to the tenants working together collectively, because where you have this one tenant complaining, you have other tenants who just pay their rent and just, hey, I have a place to stay at this time and I'll be happy with that. So I think tenants coming together collectively and saying, hey, you know, we want something done. And holding those who are in a position to hold them accountable, holding them accountable, saying, hey, we want something done about this landlord and their practices, and we're tired of enduring these type of hardships.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with Assemblyman Damon Meeks, a Rochester area Democrat who just finished his first legislative session in Albany. When we get back, we'll talk about housing as a human right, and the push, or lack thereof, to advance good cause eviction legislation at the Capitol.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our discussion about housing in New York with Assemblyman Damon Meeks, a Rochester area Democrat who just finished his first legislative session in Albany. Because your assembly seat was, I guess, an open seat with the passing of David Gant when he died while in office, you took office ahead of some of your peers. And I'm curious what that was like, just being essentially thrown into the mix during a pandemic, during a special session with the legislature convening outside of the normal January through June process. What was that like? What sort of learning curve was there, especially on these major housing issues that the legislature was considering dealing with the pandemic?
Yeah, it definitely was a learning curve of sorts. But I believe a combination of things. For one, I believe I'm a believer that, like, God will prepare you for some of the things yet to come. Mm-hmm. And for the past 10 years, I worked as a union rep with 1199 at CIU. So that gave me good experience as it related to, you know, negotiations and just building relationships, even with individuals who you may sit across from the table with and not necessarily agree on one thing, but you may be able to move an agenda forward on another. So that was one aspect. And then also, you know, leaning on individuals who had been there for some time, such as Harry Bronson. I have found Harry to be a good source to bounce things off of and to get, you know, feedback. You know, his office is far more tenured than my office. I mean, you know, coming in As a freshman assemblyman with a freshman office, for the most part, they offered their knowledge and their experience to us to say, hey, you know, if you have any questions or have any or need any feedback on a particular matter, please do not hesitate to reach out. So, you know, building those positive relationships with some of our senior assembly persons and locally having that relationship with Harry Bronson, I think that is not only beneficial to me, but also beneficial to the constituency in which I serve.
When committee assignments were doled out in 2021, one of the committees you got named to was the Housing Committee, which is a powerful committee in New York, considering how much money can flow through it, how many different policies flow through it. What was your reaction to getting named to that committee, and how did the experience on the committee compare to any expectations you might have had for what it would be like in reality?
I was excited, you know, to be on that committee because, you know, being at the table, being engaged and having the opportunity to give input on legislation that would, you know, make it to the floor regarding, you know, the matter of housing, which has definitely been a challenge. So I was really excited about that. I definitely was one to have a voice and, you know, speak on behalf of my constituents, you know, and on behalf of the community. You would get the feedback where, you know, you have some folks who felt like, hey, well, you know, the landlord's this, the landlord's that. And I was one who you know, really pushed and said, hey, this cannot be, and we don't want to push this as a us versus them. This is a trying time for the state of New York, and we're asking everyone to come together, and we may have to make sacrifices, you know, in this time. So for the landlords, it was, hey, you know, your rent may not come as soon as, you know, you normally would expect it to come. However, this is to the greater good. So that was sort of like, you know, something that I continue to push and being on that committee and saying, hey, you know, we have to do this, not just take into consideration one side versus the other, but everyone collectively taking on some levels of sacrifice to the greater good.
2 years ago, the state legislature and Governor Cuomo adopted some very sweeping tenant protections, but the measure ultimately didn't include the quote-unquote good cause eviction language, which would have capped rent increases for existing tenants and codified the specific instances when evictions could take place. And it seemed like there was maybe some quiet drumbeat for this issue throughout the legislative session, but it never really crescendoed into a loud chorus of voices the way, say, some of the calls for criminal justice reforms did. So I'm curious what conversations there were, if any, behind the scenes within the either Assembly Democratic Conference or just between members about advancing good cause eviction.
I think as far as the good cause eviction, more so came from like the advocates, you know, and the advocates and working with legislators who supported their efforts was able to like continue to push and say, hey, there's a need for a good cause eviction.
Your district includes, you know, part of the city of Rochester, but, you know, stretches out into the suburbs a little. I think you have like a little part of Gates. And I'm curious what that means then for your approach to housing. And do you find that certain areas you represent are at odds with other parts in terms of what their priorities are and their concerns? And if so, how do you balance all that?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I haven't received like any pushback, you know, even as it relates to the moratorium. I mean, there is language that would call for an eviction if you had a neighbor that's a nuisance of sorts to other tenants or to the community. But I haven't really received any pushback. And I think a lot of that is based upon people just recognize housing as a human right, you know, that everyone should be entitled to quality housing. And when we look at the neighborhoods that we represent, we know that like quality housing can have so many different effects. I mean, when we look at the intersectionality of education, housing, and health, you know, they one plays a part on the other. You know, when we look historically with children who may have had different challenges in school, and then we do the research to find that, oh, the house had lead paint and the child had high lead levels. So I think that, you know, for the most part, most New Yorkers are in support of quality housing for all New Yorkers.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that issue of, you know, housing as a human right. And I'm curious how you see that working, that principle, in reality. Does that mean everyone should have you know, a certain house. Everyone should have what?
Everyone should have quality affordable housing, meaning that, you know, the basics of, you know, electricity, running water, you know, a house where the paint is not chipped and is not hazardous to anyone's health. And when I say anyone's health, I'm talking anyone from the 90-year-old grandmother down to a 9-month baby that's crawling. So with that being said, if there's lead throughout the house and the potential of lead dust and that baby crawling through that, that's a problem. If there's broken steps where, you know, the 90-year-old can't get up the steps without hurting themselves, then that's a problem. So really being intentional about safe housing and affordable housing, you know, for families. So, you know, there was some numbers. I think it's like it shouldn't be like 30%, more than 30% of one's monthly income as far as, you know, what one pays for rent. But what we're finding across the state, and, you know, we see it here in Rochester as well, the cost of rent is steadily going up. And we see this, you know, I've seen a study yesterday in the news talking about a 9% rent hike throughout the country. And with the challenges of the affordability, we have to take that into consideration as well.
And finally, before I let you go, I just got to ask you about this video you posted at the end of June at a moving up ceremony where you are dancing and have the energy of, I don't know, but what prompted that? And, you know, is that just your general warm up, get people pumped up dance routine?
No, not general, but, you know, so I'm a member of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated.
Okay.
And one of the things that we are known for, where some fraternities and sororities are known to step, we're or to stroll, we do what we call hopping. And, you know, that was a sample of what we do. And, you know, I actually moved up from number 17 school. I finished at the time, middle school was grades 6, 7, and 8.
Mm-hmm.
So my moving up ceremony was in the 5th grade at that same school some years ago. I won't say exactly how many years ago, but some years ago. So, you know, I was absolutely excited to be in their presence, to be able to speak life into the youth and let them know, like, hey, I at one point in time, I sat in the same place that you sat in. And I also grew up in the same communities that a number of you grew up in and experienced some of the same challenges. And I remember I was probably in the 4th or 5th grade going to 17th school. And, you know, kudos to that community as well as the administration over at the school, because, I mean, they've done some really awesome things to bring that school into the 21st century. But I remember walking to school one morning and going across the basketball court and finding, you know, a small bag of cocaine on the school grounds. And, you know, I turned it in to the principal and, you know, they asked me questions, where did you find it and so on and so forth. And, you know, it felt the need to just turn it into the school and explain to them, you know, exactly where I found it and what I thought of it. And, you know, the school has done some great things. And it's a true example of what we recognize as a community school. We have hundreds of students in the school that walk to school every day. And they're looking to continue to keep the community involved and engaged in their day-to-day activities at the school. So I'm really proud to be recognized as alumni of School 17. And on that day, I just wanted to bring a little more energy and a different level of energy to the youth. And, you know,
mission accomplished.
Thank you.
Well, yeah. Well, we've been speaking with Assemblyman Damon Meeks. He's a Rochester area Democrat. Assemblyman, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dave. Have a great day.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.